This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. A new week and a new podcast for you. The morning after the Canucks win in overtime, defeat the Colorado Avalanche by a score of 4-3. Sven Berchi playing the hero with the big salute to the military. Some thought it was the Yager salute. He set us straight after the game, though. No, that was for the military. It was military appreciation night for the Vancouver Canucks. Jeff Patterson, TSN 1040, Jason Bottcher to the province. It is the PatCast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL, Coquitlam Express, and your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out online. You find them on the web at eagleridgegm.com, or if you want to stroll the showroom floor and the lot as well, 2595 Barnett Highway, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center. Lots of hockey talk coming your way. And I had a guy this week, Botch, that came at me on Twitter and said, I love the podcast, listen all the time, but enough with the travel stories. I don't care about your travel woes. And I went back at him and I said, first of all, you didn't like the travel woes, trust me. The other is, we haven't been on the road for a while, so hopefully, you know, the travel woes are kept to a minimum. I don't think we'll have too many travel stories, although we're both heading out on the road on the weekend to Florida. But we have to start with the fact that you're not feeling so well, and I think you've come down with a case of Super Bowl fever.
It could be. It could be. I've been pretty amped up. I've been out of my routine. There's been sleepless nights. I was getting up every several of these nights. I've been getting up every 45 minutes, every hour. I don't know what to do with myself. So I'm not going to say you're wrong. I mean, it feels like a fever. It feels like a real thing. But you could be right. Like, I am pretty amped, looking forward to that Super Bowl. And I just wanted an easy week, right? I just wanted to coast for this week. I wanted to do a couple provies. I wanted to mail in the provies. I wanted to mail in a couple stories. I was not looking for an intense week at all. And then yesterday happened, and like, I was here for the entire day. I had a nice little story. Like, I was just, like, I'm telling you, I had, like, everything lined up. I had a great story with Gradin talking about Pettersson and why the Canucks wanted, like, how he convinced the Canucks into getting him and how he predicted that he would be one of the leaders in the Swedish Elite League this year in points and how he foresaw it all, his vision of the future of hockey, the future of hockey in the NHL specifically. It is going to be, when it all gets out there, a nice, good story. And it's a pretty easy one. And then all shit hit the fan. And I was looking at one thing after another, starting with the report from TSN that the Canucks are looking to re-sign Gudbranson. And then IMAC weighs in and runs right to Benny, and it has all the quotes from Jim. And I'm like, fuck, this is bananas. And then at 5, of course, TL16 goes on with the boat captain and baby dragon there. And and it started fine. You know, I thought, okay, we're going to keep her on the rails here. Like, I'm not going to have to mention this too much. They're talking about Blake Skeen, you know, super friendly, like they're all old buds. And I'm thinking like this. And then that fucking thing took a turn that I have not seen in a long time, especially any Linden interviews. I've not seen a turn like that. And credit to those guys, credit to Sir Harrison Price. They did a really good interview. I compared it in the provies to the movie The Mother, which, again, I probably haven't seen it, but it sets up one way, and man, it flips on its ear, gets super twisted. And some tough questions were asked, and I don't think Trevor came off. I don't think any of the managers for the Canucks yesterday, this has not been a good week for the Canucks executive, to me. Saying that we need to answer from the Sedins because it's tied into what we're doing. That was ridiculous. It was ridiculous to say. And now guess what? They're not getting an answer. The Sedins have said we're waiting to the end of the season. So all of that was for naught. I don't even know why they talk so openly about it. And then this Gudbranson stuff happens. And I'm not going to dissect every single comment, but to suggest that they've lost Derek Dorsett, who was a third and fourth line winger. Matchup guy, Green loved him. Matchup guy for Green, tough for sure. Hit guys, did his thing. Now that you've lost that guy, now you need to re-sign Goodbranson to a multi-year, multi-million dollar deal. Like that lot, that is the bit. There's been a lot of gaps in logic over this run. And you heard me going, a lot of people heard me going with Pratt with one of them, where he said, the Canucks need to know the price. Not only do they need to know where the Sedins are going, they need to know the price. Gap in logic. But the biggest gap in logic from Jim, because Ian wrote it and Jim said, yeah, I agree that somehow Goodbranson's more important to this team now because Derek Dorsett's not with him. They can find other Derek Dorsetts. They can find other wingers. Goodbranson, he's not even like this big policeman who's out there fighting all the time. It's just not who he is. And so that to me underscored, the kind of poor week that it's been for the executives here. I think that they've done a really poor job in delivering their message. They may have a good message. They may have a good plan. They certainly have not. And everyone has to, like, I would think everyone agrees with this point. They have not articulated it well.
I planned my commute to the game yesterday. I knew Trevor was going to be on at 5, so I left home at, 10 to 5 so that I could hear it as I drove in. And I don't know if you do this, but like there are times I'll hear an interview and things will jump out at me. Like holy crap, like did he just say that? And then you start to wonder, like, did I hear that right? Or, am I going to be in the minority? Am I making this up? And then I got to the rink and, I talked to you and I talked to Kuz and anybody along Press Row and everybody kind of heard the same thing. So I was like, all right, good. I'm not going completely crazy here, first of all. But also, for me, one of the big takeaways is Trevor Linden, for 30 plus years in this market, has been the model of poise and polish. And I mean, one of the reasons he was hired was the PR aspect. Let Jim Benning do the dirty work and the legwork, and Trevor will kind of be out in front of the story. And, he's Trevor Linden. And, I even tweeted it out last night, like, usually unflappable. I thought he was pretty flappable. Like, there were a number of questions to which he did not seem to have answers. It sounded like he was in his own head, quite frankly, where, I guess we're at a point now where, he wanted to think through everything that he said so that he wasn't fanning any kind of flames or putting gas on any kind of fire. But in doing so, he didn't come across as a guy that seemed to have a direction, wasn't able to articulate any kind of direction. Apparently he's happy with the direction. That was one of my takeaways, which again, they're selling the future, and I understand that, and really that's all they've got to sell right now. But to admit publicly that you're happy with the direction when you're coming up on the end of three straight years as bottom feeders, like, the future is great if it ever arrives, but there's also the here and now to worry about. And the here and now, quite frankly, hasn't been very good. And I don't think we have to go too deep on that. People know what's gone on with this hockey club. And, they were better last night, but they couldn't have been a whole lot worse than they were against Buffalo before the break. So, we'll see if that's a night for them to build on. And, Bo Horvat scores, and I thought Horvat was good. And they reunited that line. You wrote about that in the Provies. I've been banging that drum for a while. Like, just load up for the final 32 games. Yeah, keep that line. Like, I don't care what else you do in the lineup, right? But don't search for balance when you don't have any scoring. Yeah. Like, take the scoring you do have, load up, and see if it can't get back to the way it was early on in the season. As for Goodbranson, and I wonder, and I don't think this has necessarily been given the play that it probably should, but look, this guy's been, damaged goods in his 2 years here. Last year, season cut short after 30 games with a wrist injury, needs surgery. There were lots of questions at the start of the season. Could he be this big, rough, tough, physical guy, coming off a surgically repaired wrist? And he said, yes, he could. And, early in the season, there was the game in Boston that he got thrown out of for the check from behind, and he had to fight that night. And I think he fought Tom Wilson here as well. And this isn't all about fighting, but, if he is going to be this big police guy for this hockey club, I think that's going to be, and nobody else on this team can play that role. So it has to be, on his resume at the very least. But now this season, shoulder injury before Christmas, comes back. And look, you and I were both out on that first part of the road trip where he was a different player. Like, he was hitting everything. And, Toronto on a Saturday night, and he's the big spotlight, the big stage, and he's finishing all these checks, and in Montreal, and it carried on, and Columbus and whatnot. Then they get to that league break and he just disappears. And I do wonder if there's a cause and effect there that, all of a sudden ramping up this physical play, now he's come down with a back injury. Like, is one linked to the other? And if so, how much of a concern is that if this guy that's supposed to be big and rugged and physical is now nursing a back injury because of a run of 5 or 10 games where he was hitting everybody?
Sure, and generally, he's not, like, he did have a run of games where he's doing that, but that hasn't been his MO over the course of his 62 games with the Canucks. There hasn't been a lot of stretches like that, and I think you can add the injury into this situation, because I do think it does complicate things, not only what he's worth on an open market, but what he's worth to the Canucks, you know, when they're looking at re-signing him. This is no secret. I don't think they haven't been happy. We wouldn't be at this point if they were thrilled with the offers that they were getting with Gudbranson. You heard Lyndon at the beginning of the month, totally nonplussed by Gudbranson, said it's something we'll look at in 6 to 8 weeks. 3 weeks later, they're looking at it. And because you just have to understand Gudbranson's situation. He's on a bad team, the bottom of the standings, and Green all season long consistently has deployed him as a fifth or sixth, to me, six, as a number six defenseman in this lineup. He's number six in average ice time in this group. And I think the only guy that's below him that's a regular is Stetcher. And let's face it, Stetcher is better. Like, come on, Stetcher is a better defenseman. Stetcher's been one of the good stories. Like, when you asked yesterday, you know, who's improved? There hasn't been a lot of guys that have improved over the course of the season. Troy Stetcher is one of them. Obviously, Brock Besser, but I think Troy Stetcher hit his groove. Difficult at the beginning of the year. We've talked about it before here. Off the power play, mental hurdles to overcome. He's overcome them, and he's one of the poster boys of modern NHL defense. Would I like to see him on the power play more? Yeah, I would. He had 24 points last year. I think that they had an opportunity to try to develop and grow that. They chose not to. But I got Stetcher ahead of Gudbranson, which to me put Gudbranson in this lineup at 6 or 7. Okay. And other teams see that. They see, like, your guy is playing 17 minutes a night. Why are we going to give a second and something else, even a second? And what I've heard is that it's been a mid-round pick, not unlike the Ham Hughes situation in terms of offers. And the Canucks are, they're not thrilled with that. And you add in the fact that, that they seem to think that he's the answer to their toughness issues, which I don't think he is. I think that you can find cheaper, better options than him. Because let's do a framework of what his extension would look like. I would tend to think if he's 25 and he's giving up free agency, he's going to get more than Delzato. I don't think he can get more than Tanev in this group. Like, there's no way they can just start paying him more than Chris Tanev. So that puts him in the 3.5 to 4, so maybe 3.75 range. It's a lot of money to be paying a third-pairing guy for the next 4 years.
Right, and I look at, you know, they got out from under a similar contract, the final year of a similar contract, and in some ways a similar player in Lucas Spezza, thanks to the expansion draft, but they got that contract off the books, and now it looks, you know, if in fact they do go down this road and ultimately re-sign him, that you're just loading that back on to your salary cap, that you're taking on a contract for a guy that can't play out of your bottom pairing, that, you know, doesn't bring any offense, might be more physical than what you've got. But I agree with you. In the big picture, he hasn't been as advertised when they made the trade and this talk of this big, tough guy. And sometimes I wonder, like, he's such a nice guy off the ice. Like, you know, you wish he was a better player, because the team could use a spokesman like that. And he's a great guy to deal with. But sometimes I wonder if, you know, he couldn't check that niceness at the door of the locker room and sort of get into character. But I just don't know that that's in his DNA. And I've heard lots of people say, oh, if he gets to the open market, like, look at Carl Alsner last year, like, absolutely crushed it with a, you know, big money long-term deal. And I'm not convinced. Like, I just think every day the hockey world is getting smarter about the way money's being allocated, and he's a one-dimensional guy.
Well, and they're getting smarter about the money being allocated, but plus, all of a sudden, the 6'4", 240 guys are out of favor, and more teams are looking. It's a copycat league. More teams are kind of looking at the Nashville model. They're looking at the smaller defensemen. So I'm like, if he was the Panthers really wanted to trade him back in the day. Like they tried it the 2015 draft. They had deals with Edmonton. They had a deal with Calgary. It didn't work out. Then in 16, they end up dealing him to the Canucks. And part of the mythology of that, the legend that goes along with those attempts, is that he was looking for a $5 million plus per year payday. And the Panthers wanted none of that. They couldn't pay a bottom pairing guy that kind of money. And back then he was playing 20 minutes a game for the Panthers. Now he's playing 17 here with the Canucks. So if he is receptive to the idea that, you know, maybe I'll resign with the Canucks, that shows you that he's seeing what you're seeing, that probably in July, or there's a chance in July, he could get Cody Franson. He could get, you know, that teams aren't lining up to sign him, that he could be disappointed in the number of offers. And then that's why those demands or requests or desires of $5 million plus would be now in a situation where the Canucks could reasonably talk to him about. I don't think it's not the right move for the Canucks. They can't. Can they really come back with the same defense again next year? Like, let's just bring these guys all back together?
No. There's the answer. And yet you and I have done this before. I mean, we've been at this for a couple of years with the podcast. I can't remember when, but, you know, we talked about the need for this organization to have the wait a sec guy, right? And these next 4 weeks, to me, the wait a sec guy, he needs to be found here somewhere at Rogers Arena. Like, there has to be the wait a sec guy because, you know, the idea of re-signing Thomas Vanek, wait a sec. No, like, for the good of the organization, wait a sec. You know, committing long-term to Erik Gudbranson, wait a sec. Like, I don't know who that person is, but, you know, again, like, there's got to be somebody that can get this management group to stop and sort of have that sobering second thought, because I am so with you. If you're building a winning team in today's NHL, your bottom six guys, your bottom pairing guys on defense and your depth guys, like, you can find guys that can play, you know, in that $1.5 million, $2 million range. You can't have a one-dimensional guy eating up $4-4.5 million, somehow $5 million bucks, and not just for a year, but it would be on a long-term deal. And he took the show-me contract last summer and really hasn't had an opportunity to show much, but at the same time, he's turned 26. Like, is he going to get a whole lot better? Yeah, he turned 26. So, you know, again, in a young man's game, we see it all the time now. It's getting younger by the day, it seems. Like, do you honestly think that Erik Gudbranson is getting a whole lot better?
No, he's not. This is as good as he's going to get. Everyone needs to realize that. We've seen, like, this is Erik Gudbranson. Like, over the course of his 60 games in Vancouver, that's who you're going to get on a multi-year deal. That's not going to change.
All right, so if Gudbranson is healthy, and we'll find out after practice, I guess, maybe you get an indication if he's back in the lineup and where he stands, or maybe even from practice here when they start to do some line rushes. Whether he's healthy for tomorrow night's game or the one after that, pretty soon here they're going to have 8 healthy defensemen that believe that they should play, and, you know, guys that are NHL defensemen. I mean, say what you will about Biega, but the coach seems to like the Bulldog, and right now he's got a spot in the lineup. Is that a healthy situation in your mind? Like, if they re-sign Gudbranson, then he's here for the rest of this season and obviously beyond. Instead of clearing out some space here so that these young guys can play, we've talked about Philip Holm, and, you know, is he going to get an opportunity, a look here down the stretch? Is it healthy for this group to have 2 guys who feel strongly that they should be in the lineup on a nightly basis sitting out?
I think it's healthy if the guys are sitting out, or if you have a plan for it, right? Like, okay, every once in a while it's Hutton, and we're going to use it to motivate him. Every once in a while, you know, when Pouliot's flagging, we're gonna sit him out and use it to motivate him. Elzato, like, why can't I? The MDZ one makes no sense to me. Like, he's this untouchable guy who Travis gives these full-throated defenses of. And like, this is just the reality. Like, he's not a great defenseman. He sat lots. He was healthy scratch, I think, like 15 times last year on a Flyers team that didn't make the playoffs. There's nothing wrong with making him a healthy scratch right now. Like, they've given him every opportunity. They've given him every role. They've played him a ton of minutes, and he's been on an extraordinary number of goals against. Like, he's earned his way to be in a healthy scratch. So if all of these guys were options and you could interchange them and then wait for an injury, it would be okay. You know, an okay situation. I do think I would like to see home. They thought the world of home. They went out and they chased him. They met with him in Paris. They sold him on their plan for him. They believed that he could be an NHL defenseman who could get points and guy who could grow with the team and grow in North America. And they sold him on all this. He had other opportunities with better teams, signed on the dotted line. And then they turn around. It feels to me like they second guessed themselves by bringing in Delzato. If you put home on this team instead of Delzato, I think it has an entirely different look. For one, I think home is better. But if you bring Gudbranson back, you re-sign him, you don't trade him for a pick or picks at the deadline, and home stays in the minors, I don't think you're going to lose him. He'll be gone at the end of this year. And if it's Hutton and Pouliot, if those are the two guys who are more often than not are getting healthy scratch, I don't think that that's a tenable or good situation for anyone. Those guys need to play. And plus, they're better. They're better than the guys. They're better than Delzato. Hutton's better than Delzato. He is. He just is. That's a reality.
You wrote about it on the weekend, too. You know, on top of all the flaws that are now being pointed out regularly in Delzato's game, and, you know, they're there. I don't think it takes these great articles to point them out. I mean, people see the guy's on the ice for a shitload of goals against.
Yeah.
And through all of that, somehow, remains part of the leadership group too. Like MDZ, that's not enough letters. Now he's got to have an A as well.
I don't, that's the one that kind of floors me with Travis. Like, how is Horvat not a guy with an A? Like, Horvat to me is the next one. Horvat to me is the guy who either for next year, if they do bring the band back together and this defense comes back and the Sedins come back and Erickson comes back, they have to go without a captain or Horvat. Like that, to me, those are the only two options that you can go with because the leadership, it's not leading. It's certainly not leading on the ice. They're not having a very effective influence on the rest of these guys. And Henrik, the Sedins have one foot out the door. This isn't their team anymore, man. Like they're like, they can't even say now if they want to be back next year. Like it's over. Like if they want to come back, and they're played like fourth liners when everyone's healthy. Like Travis has them at 13, 14 minutes. It's very difficult to wear the C, play 13, 14 minutes a game, and also have one foot already in retirement. Be like, you know, we're not only going to wait. The message I got that the Sedins are not only going to wait for the end of the season, they're going to take significant time at the end of the season and reflect on their year and what they want to do next. They're not part of the future. They're not part of the core anymore. It's time, certainly, at the very least, time to move on from this world we live in with Henrik as captain. Like, it's over. It just is, and it should be over at the end of this season.
I'm with you there. I wrote about that when I was writing province columns a year ago, and you know, I made the point, and I think you did as well. Like, you know, there are teams that have done it. San Jose's a great example. You can move on from a guy who's worn the C. You can breathe new life into an organization, and you know, and not stunt the growth of your group. The Sharks went to a Stanley Cup final after they did that to Joe Thornton. I don't expect the Canucks to be in the Stanley Cup final anytime soon, but I'm with you. Like, it is time. Like, this is the thing. Like, you talk about, you know, are these guys coming back? Like, right now, as it stands, you know, Vanek, if they don't re-sign him, he walks away. But otherwise, you're looking at essentially returning the same 20 guys that have this team in the gutter this year next year.
With Gaudette and Patterson joining the group. That would be the change.
You hope so. Yeah, I mean, again, we've seen what bringing Besser in and what he can do to invigorate a fan base. But this whole idea, too, that, you know, you got to have all these veteran guys around to mentor. Like, how's the mentorship really going when you've been 28th, 29th, and you're headed for another finish like that again? Like,
that's such a good point. I'm so over the mentor. Like, they don't need to be mentored. I don't think that there's a lot of communication, actually, with, like, the old veterans are not pulling the young 20-something millennials under their arms and, like, you know, walking them around the streets and, like, showing them how to live. Like, it just doesn't work that way. I just don't buy. You're right. I don't believe the mentoring. Besser should be the mentor. He should be teaching them how to fucking shoot. He should be the mentor of this team. Come on.
No, but, like, so much is made about, oh, there's time in Minnesota and, you know, I'm not saying that Vanek has turned his back in any way on Brock Besser, but whether Thomas Vanek was here or not, Brock Besser is just, he's a special player, and he was going to be a special player, and we saw that before Christmas when his line mates were out. And there was nothing going right for this team, and they were giving up seven on a nightly basis, and goalies couldn't stop a puck. And, you know, there was every reason for a guy like Besser to sort of get down on the situation, and yet that's when he rose above. And that run before Christmas is really, like, it's unbelievable to me that he scored in 8 of 10 games, and it got to a point where they weren't winning, and nobody cared. Like, the result was so secondary to, did Besser score tonight? And 8 out of 10 times, the answer was yeah, he did.
Oh, it was great. It was that, considering the circumstances, considering who he was playing with, like, that's the best stretch, best performance that we've seen since the heyday of the Sedin's core, since they were great and Kessel was scoring 40 goals and all that. To score 8 goals in 10 games, lead the NHL in goals over a 2-month span, and to do it playing with Slam and Sammy, and to do it, you know, not playing with Horvat, to do it on that awful, like, this just, it's not a good, like, it's been one of the worst power plays in the NHL for 5 years. He's on it, and all of a sudden he's breathing life into it. So given all the circumstances, given the fact he's on the lowest scoring team in the NHL since the beginning of the 2015-16 season, for him to do that is the most impressive thing I've seen in a long time here in Vancouver.
I don't know about you. I mean, I wasn't surprised that the guy wins the skills competition, the shooting accuracy thing. Like, we've seen it all season. And for him to go in there, and he's risen to the occasion on the big stages, hat trick against Crosby and the Penguins that Saturday night in Toronto with all the attention the day before. You know, he scored probably his best, or for me, one of his best goals of the season against the Leafs. So, you know, for him to walk into All-Star weekend, and that, by the way, is something the league has to look at. It's no longer the All-Star game. Like, it's a whole bunch of games. So, like, they just got to call it the All-Star weekend. But, like, I don't know. I'm not going to get on my soapbox and, you know, demand changes. But it struck me as funny that they continue to call it the All-Star game when it's a whole bunch of games. And really the whole thing is the weekend. Did you watch any of it?
No, it's Wednesday and we're still talking about it. I cannot believe the amount of people that have been talking about this All-Star thing. Like, it's not even real hockey. No, I didn't watch it. People are even mad at me on Twitter saying, like, you cover hockey and you didn't watch All-Star Weekend, the All-Star game? I'm like, fucking no, I didn't, man. I was off parenting, hanging out with my kids. Like, there's better shit for me to be doing than watching this lame shinny crap. Like, okay, you guys are all jacked up about the performance. Like, I didn't watch. Like, was Besser even that amazing that it's Wednesday and we're still talking about this stupid shinny game?
Hey, it's our first podcast since the All-Star game. So I had to bring it up at the very least. No, like, you know, I did end up watching some of it. I was just kicking around on Sunday. I didn't have a whole lot to do. I didn't watch the skills competition on Saturday, but I certainly have seen the highlights. Now, I got a laugh on Monday when we came back to practice and Besser wasn't here. He was traveling back from Tampa. And, like, every player, you know, was asked that question. Did you watch the All-Star game? What did you think?
What'd they say?
No. Like, Sutter looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, no, it was a weekend off. No, I didn't watch hockey on the weekend. And then somebody's like, hey, Henrik, did you see Besser? And he's like, no, but my kids showed me, like, the YouTube video. I've seen it now, but, like, I watched it on YouTube. Vanek, too, you know, the mentor, apparently couldn't bring himself to watch All-Star Hockey either. So, you know, the guys that do this for a living, they weren't all that.
Do you know how old Henrik's guy? I got to look up how old his kid is, because he may have missed Henrik's heyday, right? Like, is he 8?
I think the oldest, I would have said 10 now, but yeah, like, but he would have been, you know, 2 or 3.
Yeah. So essentially, we'd be missing. Now he's all, like, hyped about Brock Besser showing Henrik. Look at this goal. This guy's amazing. Henrik's like, yeah, man. Like, dude, you should have seen me in 2010-11. I was pretty good back then, too.
But I thought he handled the weekend well. And it was funny. I mean, the Canucks showed a video of it last night up on the Jumbotron in one of the intermissions. Like,
we laughed, but you laughed because you came in yesterday and there was talk of people were questioning us and you and wondering, like, is there going to be a video tribute? And you laughed, like, a video tribute to the All-Star game. There was, in fact, a video tribute. Was there not?
Well, no, like, in the intermission, they kind of it was a capsule of his Besser weekend. Yeah. But it wasn't, I wouldn't call it a tribute in that sense. But I was amazed at how much the NHL, the machine, like, just drags a guy like that through the weekend and like the photo shoots, and he's got to pose with these puppies that he ended up adopting. He comes home with all this money in a car and a dog on top of that. But like, it was crazy. And I was talking to a couple of the Canuck staffers that were down there with him too. And they said, you have no idea. Like, you know, he had the week off before that last break, but this was no break. Like, he is getting yanked in every direction. He's starting to get the attention. We saw it in Toronto. Like, people here that somehow think that, you know, he's not getting his fair shake at the NHL level. I think,
I don't know how much, it's the hype that Austin Matthews gets is so far and beyond, though, right? So that's what people here are comparing it to.
Sure. But, I mean, you know where the network, right, nightly network highlight shows come from. But I do think, like, again, it was a great coming out party for him. If people didn't know him before the weekend, they have to now. You know, the guy wins the MVP. Good for him. But I think the bigger win was the accuracy. And again, it's an exhibition thing, but like, we've been lucky enough to watch him on a nightly basis with that shot.
Right.
And so for him just to step up and start ringing, you know, picking off the targets, breaking one of them in the process, like, I thought, you know, that's great. Like, this is a guy that's known for this snapshot, and here he is 50 games into his NHL career, and he's just stepping up on the biggest stage and doing his thing. So good on him.
Yeah, he's obviously, we've seen it. Like, he is a great shooter. He's very smart with his shot, and it's not easy. Like, I remember, like, last night you were asking Berchi about that game-winning goal, which looked like one of the best snipes of the entire season, and he essentially said to you, like, look, I wasn't picking a spot. I was just trying to get it over the goalie's shoulder in general, and I got kind of lucky, and I didn't really see where it went. Like, you don't get answers like that from Besser. Besser is like, this is exactly the you know, 4-inch by 4-inch space I was trying to hit the puck, you know, trying to aim the puck for, and I missed it by just this much, or I nailed it by this much. So, and Berchi's a goal, like, he can score. He's not a great goal scorer in the NHL, but he can score. He's really your top six player. It's certainly not easy. And it does, like, to see what Besser's done this year, to see what he did at the All-Star game, and then to hear, like, I see, like, what got me last night was Bulis has this big thing, like, the Canucks, he's like the police for don't always pass it to Besser. Like, that's not the answer. Like, I'm sorry, but the rest of this season is a tailspin. We're funneling down the toilet. What the fuck do we have in this world if we don't have pass it to Besser whenever you can? Like, it's something we can all get behind. I don't know why he's trying to ruin the fun. I don't know why he's trying to wreck the party. It's something collectively, as the fans and media, we all understand it. He's great. The Sedins call him the most natural goal scorer they've ever played with. Do whatever it takes to get him to the puck. And when you don't do that, when you pass to Biega, when you're a 3-on-2 and Besser's over on the other side open, allow us to complain about it, man. We don't have a lot. There's 30-something games of meaningless hockey ahead of us. Please, I'm actually pleading with Bulis. Like, just back off, man. Like, give us this. We want them to pass it to Besser, okay? So if you don't want them always passing it, and I'm talking to you right now, Bulis, if you don't want them passing to Besser, just shut up. Like, leave us alone. Let it be. Keep it in your head. Give us some joy. Give us something we can collectively rally around, man. Like, I don't get why he's trying to wreck our enjoyment.
I think he was trying to give the fan base plenty of enjoyment with his latest video. He may be here, in fact. If I look up in the rafters somewhere, he may be filming the next one. Who knows? But along those lines, too, and he wasn't alone. Like, there were a lot of people last night, like, you know, we're a month ahead of the trade deadline now. So, look, it's content. That's all it is. I snapped a pic of the list of NHL teams that were in attendance here last night because I find it's kind of curious when teams are doubling up. Like, lots of teams have scouts that live here in Vancouver. They're here every game. That doesn't mean, you know, that they're watching the Vancouver Canucks with an eye towards a trade. They, you know, they just come here. They're hockey guys. But there were a couple of teams last night that had two guys listed on the list. And the Leafs were one of them, and Cam Charon was one of the guys, you know, listed. And I just put a pick, and I said, you know, here are the teams that are on, you know, Scouts Row. And then all these people, you know, Sharon's not a scout. Like, what are you talking about? And Bulis was one of those guys.
No,
like,
really?
Absolutely, yeah.
No way. What's wrong with him, man? Like, holy cow. He really checked you on that?
Yeah, he had, well, I can't remember what it was, some sort of, you know, one of those acronyms that, I even had to look his up because I didn't get it. That's how out of touch I am with the acronyms. But yeah, like, it's just a public service. That's all it was. It was a picture. And then people are
here watching the game. You're scouting the game. That's why you're here. He's not in the press box writing a story about it. He's not in the media. He's not drinking beers with his buds. He's here to scout the game. That's where the scouts sit. It's Scout Row. What's he? Maybe if Bulis came here more often for the games, we could explain this to him.
It's the podcast, the Patcast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. Month of January is winding down, but the drive into New Year bonus event still going on. Eagle Ridge GM up to 14 grand in discounts. Get huge savings on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com for all the details. You talked about yesterday just being one of those days. We had one at the tail end of that trip in November, Nashville, when the Derek Dorsett news came down and Daniel's 1,000th point and Besser was scoring and Benning was available. Like, there are certain days throughout the year where, you know, there's enough in the news cycle to get you through a week. And yesterday was one of those as well. And you covered it off at the tail end of the Provies. But I was fascinated, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, because I got a lot of traction, a lot of feedback on social as well, of where people thought Travis Green was going when I asked him, you know, 50 games into the season, are young guys improving? And he said, some are. Right. And then he said, but, you know, I don't want guys who've been in the league 1 or 2 years, or no, guys that have been in the league 1 or 2 years, I want them to be in this league for 10 or 12 years. And, you know, there are enough guys with a year or two on their resume. He didn't name names. I immediately jumped to Ben Hutton. I don't know why. I mean, there are other candidates.
Well, he's been scratched, right? Like,
I suppose. Hutton, but Hutton was the first guy that jumped to mind. I was just curious, you know, where your mind takes you when you hear him offer up something like that.
Well, I think clearly Vertanen is one of those guys. And that was the knock in the first year, right? Like, that was the knock on Vertanen and McCann from Willie and the Sedins, was that they acted entitled. And given that background and given that history, I immediately think of Jake when he says stuff like that. But he's got his work cut out with him with Jake. Like, there are moments I wrote about this last night. But the Detroit, the Big Tuna Jake, right? The Detroit game, the 8 shots on net. Like, heading into last night's game, I think he had got 3 without a shot. So the Big Tuna game, he had 8 shots on net. He scored a goal. He had the big hit of the Cronwalling game. Like, right now, currently, 3 months later, I can't picture him playing like that. Like, I can't for the like I would be shocked if he put together another game like that. So why is he not progressing? Like, why was that not a liftoff point? Like, why did he peak in mid-October? I don't know. I think everyone needs to have some self-reflection. And I do think that the city, even the media, the fans, people want to like Travis. They want to rally around the new guy. He's very confident, I find. When I hear him, often I think, okay, this guy's got a plan. When he says, you know, he always goes back to, we're trying to build players who can win and put them in spots where they can learn to win. Like, I buy a lot of it. Like, I kind of lap it up and think, like, okay, like, this guy, I can get behind him, right? But when you ask that question, and it was a really, like, thoughtful, good question. I don't know how long, if you spent all night thinking about it or not, but out of the blue, 50 games in, you said, you know, basically, who's improved on this team? Have any of these players improved? And he said some. I think earlier in the podcast, I was saying, yeah, Besser and Stetcher, but there's not a lot. And Jake is one of the complicated ones, for sure. And he's certainly not better than the Big Tuna game. That's disappeared. Like, could you picture him right now playing like that?
The only other game that jumped to mind was San Jose just before Christmas, where, you know, and again, I don't know what gets into him on, you know, but it does come off as a one-off. And you want to believe, as you said, like, okay, this is the jumping on point. Like, here we go, jump on the Jake train. And that night, like, so easily the best skater on the, like, it wasn't even in question. And he made it look so easy. And you just think, like, how come you can't do that with any sort of regularity? And, you know, sure enough, in those games where he has been engaged and where he has been skating and shooting, He's also scored. Like, good things have happened. And yet, there's just way too many nights where he looks like the Jake before they sent him down to Utica last year and, you know, having his stuff where, like, you can just feel the wheels in his mind churning, trying to think the game and over-processing the game and trying to figure out, you know, where am I supposed to be that I'm not going to get shit from the coach when things go sideways?
Yeah, and there's no better example than that than the giveaway in the Sabres game where he got lost in that game of who was on his line and who he was switching with, and he thought he was Berchi would be with him and on his wing, and Berchi was leaving for a line change. Like, that's just sloppy hockey, and I would suggest to you it's the type of hockey that at the end of January you shouldn't be seeing from him. Like, he's played more than enough time in the league to know this kind of stuff. But, I mean, he's not alone in guys that have kind of fallen off the cliff. Like, where's Grant? What happened to Granlund this year? Like, what a he's nowhere close to the guy he was under Willie. Like, he's disappeared from this lineup.
You know that nobody is more disappointed in Marcus Granlund than I am. You know that for a fact. 24.
24. And what's he at? 7?
Over 3 seasons at this rate, if he's lucky.
No, he's been incredibly disappointed. And I think Hutton's lost. I don't think Hutton's better than he was at the beginning of the season. So when I look around this lineup, and, you know, one of the big things, challenges for Travis is to develop these young guys. He's moving forward and he's inexperienced. It's not like he's got like years of experience. Like, you know, it's pretty limited. This is his first time in the NHL. This is his first time trying to get to NHL players. I think he's a bit of a work in progress when it comes to that kind of stuff. But a lot of these guys, to be honest, and it pains me to say this, were better under Willie. Like, Hutton was better under Willie. Gudbranson was better under Willie. Granlund was better under Willie. Like, I hope that there's a greater good, and like at the end of all of this, I'll see the vision, Travis's vision. I want to believe in him. You know, like, I have got no time for the way Willie coached this team, but I cannot deny that there are guys right now this year who are better last year.
Yeah, and that's, again, I look for, I mean, we talked earlier about, okay, so you inject Gaudette at the end of this season, give the little peekaboo look that college guys get, and then, you know, Pettersson. But I don't see room for more than that. And we can talk about all these young prospects that they're stockpiling, but some of those guys are still 3 and 4 years away. And then you have a week like this where these reports out of Finland that Olli Juolevi, and there's so many questions about this guy, and now he's a healthy scratch with his team over in Finland. Like, that's not good news.
I'm gonna think the best of that one. I'm gonna approach that with a glass half full. They're trying to send a message to the guys. I think Juolevi's had a pretty good year, and the Canucks would like to give him every opportunity to make the team next year. It's one of the reasons that they're reluctant to trade Tanev, is they want, that's a great spot for Juolevi, like playing with Tanev and transition to the NHL with Tanev. I hope he's on the team. Like, I hope next year there's Gaudette. This is what I'm hoping. Gaudette, Pettersson, Juolevi are all on the team, and Demko is splitting the work with Markstrom. That's what I'm hoping for, and that, to me, that will be somewhat uplifting. Like, I would be more excited heading into the season, a season like that, than, you know, Pettersson's trying to figure out this game in Utica, and, you know, Gaudette's limited on a, you know, only playing 9 minutes for Travis, and Demko's got needs another year to develop, which I don't buy. Like, I think Demko should be on this team right now. I think, like, Nilsson should be added to this whole trade deadline situation. Get Demko here, get him playing games. The guy is super mature, he's smart, and he's been really good on a bad team there.
Do you think there is any, like, if you take injuries out of the equation, do you think there's any chance we see Demko here before the end of this season? I mean, just for a look-see, for a couple of games.
I do, yeah, I do. I honestly think that that's their plan. I happen to believe that they have at least flirted with the idea of trading Nilsson, at least explored the idea, see what they could get back in return. Actually laid out a plan in the Provies the other day how to bump up his numbers. It includes him starting tomorrow night against the Blackhawks. Next week, I think I got him starting against the Panthers and the Canes. Those three games, he gets all those three games against those three teams. I think he can bump up his save percentage. I think he has value. when you start to look around the NHL and the way goalies have developed, a lot of those guys that are really great right now were playing at 22 years old. I also think the Canucks see it as, you know, in these last 30 games, they have to give their fans something to believe in. They have to, you know, it's got to be more than just looking at Gaudette. There's got to be, you know, I think that they can bring Demko up. I think that their plan is to bring Demko up at some point and strut him around like a thoroughbred and be like, look to the horse that's going to be on this team next year, boys. Like, he can be really good.
I'd like to see that. I wonder, though, when you talk about exploring the trade market for Nilsson, and I see, you know, a team like Winnipeg brings Michael Hutchinson up and plays him against Tampa Bay. You know, they'd love to be able to move that piece because they've got some issues now on defense. Like, I just can't imagine that Anders Nilsson, given his limited track record this year and his spotty track record over the years, would have an awful lot of value in and of himself for a team that, you know, is looking to upgrade their backup position. I think there are other options out there. I think he might be a kind of throw-in, perhaps, if the Canucks are, you know, working on a bigger deal than just a one-for-one kind of swap.
Him for a fourth, Branson for a third, Vanek for a third. Use those picks and try to get, like, a top 60 pick at the draft.
You think there's a team that's giving up a fourth for Anders Nilsson?
Maybe. If he has a 920 save percentage, and I think that if he's three or four good games away, he was good enough that the Canucks had to give him 2 years at 2.5 to be a backup. There are teams that are interested in him. And if he could get the save percentage, he's three or four good games away from a 920 save percentage. If he could get it to there, yeah, I think he could get a fourth maybe.
Do you think what's happening in Utica plays into it at all? Like, Demko has been their MVP so far and away. I think back to when we were all in Toronto. Yeah, I mean, when I talked to Ryan Johnson, like, you know, when I asked him about Demko, and it just is kind of, it was like a Travis Green chuckle was his first response, which just kind of indicated, like, you know, he was laughing at the question about how good he's been. Like, he's been so good for them. You know, if they're in the push for a playoff spot and he's really all they've got to hang their hat on down there, do you disrupt that? Do the Canucks owe it to Utica in any way? Or is it all about what goes on here at the NHL level?
Yeah, I don't care. Like, I don't care what happens in Utica. Like, it's got no bearing on me. Travis took that team to the Calder Cup Finals. Are we reaping the benefits of that? Like, who, like, is, like, was gone? I can't remember. I got to look who was on that team. But Markstrom was definitely on that team. Did that make Markstrom an amazing goalie? His experience? No, he's, like, still a work in progress here, like, years later, trying to figure out in the NHL. So if that run to the Calder Cup Finals had led to a bunch of impact, like several impact players, like Archibald was in the team and doing well, and there were other guys from that group. Grenier was scoring goals in a top six role. Like, if it had, like, I'd be all in on you guys, but I hear people like, it's important you can make the playoffs and teach these guys how to win. Really? Because I saw a team make the Calder Cup Finals, and I'm not seeing any of those guys doing anything in the NHL. So maybe it means fuck all that happened. So I don't care. So what?
Wait a second. Nick Dowd was in that Calder Cup final, and look at him now, huh?
Right, yeah, the one, who could have guessed that the one guy that was in that, that was in the final would be such a huge part of where the Canucks are right now. No, you're right. Nick Dowd.
Hey, speaking of Markstrom, man, I think we're a month away, and I know you're all over it. I've seen you tweeting and retweeting about the, you know, there's this contest to redesign, or for a night only, his mask. Last night we saw he tried to use the ears on that mask to make a save.
Oh, my God. I didn't get a chance to ask him about it, but that looked to be the worst save attempt. And I know it was a deflection and all that, but he headed a puck into the ice and he face-planted into the ice. Like, it was of all the – like, there's been a lot of bad goals for him. I think, you know, rebound control has been part of it. But he does make some odd decisions. That was the oddest of them all.
A few more minutes here on this week's podcast from Rogers Arena. The Canucks practicing as we do our thing here, about 15 rows up from ice level. Look, we spent a lot of time talking about what Trevor Linden did and didn't say. One of the things that we really didn't get into, though, is Jim Benning's future. And here we are, a month away from the trade deadline. And Trevor Linden was asked and then re-asked about, you know, where things go. Benning's been asked about it as well. You know, you talk to anybody, we hear that these conversations are ongoing. Like, these conversations have taken place for forever. Like, there's 30 games left in the season. Like, what have they been talking about, and how haven't they come to a resolution on this? And then Trevor Linden was asked point blank yesterday, you know, why doesn't Jim have a contract? And like, there wasn't much of a vote of confidence. It's always about how he's forward thinking and his focus is on the rest of this season. But Trevor Linden was given every opportunity to say, like, we're going to get something done here. It's not a big deal. And he said anything but that. So, you know, what are we to take from those sort of public declarations or lack thereof when it comes to, you know, we talked about mixed messages and the fact that Trevor had trouble staying on point and his message. I mean, what's the message to Jim Benning through all of this?
Well, I just want to go over this. I'm going to get right to that. I do want to get over this Utica Calder Cup team. Cal O'Reilly, these are their point sitters. Cal O'Reilly, Grenier, Dustin Jeffrey, Hunter Shinkarak, Alex Friesen, Nicholas Jensen, Darren Archibald, Will Acton, and Brendan Gaunce. Okay, so I don't think it helped any of those guys that they made the playoffs and went on a run. I think you've mentioned this to me a few times. I think it's ridiculous that the Canucks keep saying that the Jim and the team continue to have conversations. Like, there's no conversations. What conversations are there? It's absurd. And I know that Linden is telling people privately that the last 32 games or whatever we are, 30 games are going to have no bearing on their decision and won't impact what happens with Jim. And they shouldn't. Like, the team's win-loss record at the end of the season shouldn't be what impacts. I've seen some interviews where I've thought, well, Jim kind of sounds like a guy who knows that maybe he's on his way out. But at the same time, lately, I've seen a super confident Jim, you know, been out there talking to Ian and several times saying, like, we need toughness and we're going to try to re-sign him. And like, he sounds like a guy, the way that I'm reading those quotes, he seems coming off as a guy that's in control of his situation. So I'm not exactly sure, what's going to happen. I think it's disingenuous though that they keep saying, like, we're having conversations with Jim. Like, there's nothing to converse about. Either you're going to keep the only thing that you could be conversing in the head office is, like, do we wait to see who's available in the off season? Do we wait to see what Colin says? Do we wait to see what Lombardi says? Like, those are the types of conversations that I would understand. Conversing with Jim about all of this makes no sense at all.
And I think there are people, and I get it, it's a legitimate question, you know, how can you have this guy who is uncertain about his future, you know, with his hands on the wheel at the trade deadline? But I think we know this much about Jim Benning. He's a man of integrity. Like, if he wants his job, and I assume that he does, then, of course, he's going to act in the best interest of the hockey club. I mean, he wants to continue to steer this thing moving forward.
And like, Trevor's there. Trevor's there.
And that's just it. I mean, there are so many checks and balances now in every front office in the NHL. But, like, I've seen people try to paint this picture that somehow Jim's going to go rogue on trade deadline day.
Maybe Jim going rogue would be better. Like, maybe all of a sudden I'm going to trade all the, like, fuck this team. I'm trading all the veterans. And we'd all be like, this is amazing. Go, man. Go rogue. Like, maybe the opposite is what needs to be happen. What needs to happen. Maybe he needs to go rogue and trade Gudbranson and Vanek and Tanev. And all of a sudden he's like gutting the team. And it may be in the end what's better for everyone.
So now you're trying to sell me that in like one great final plot twist, he becomes the wait-a-sec guy. Is that what you're telling me? That after 4 years of, you know, questionable moves and sort of going all in on the wrong guys, now he's going to be the wait-a-sec guy.
I'm picturing, like, he's angry and he wants to decimate the team and they're bringing in Dean Lombardi. So he's had enough. So he's going to make everything he can, every move he can to gut the franchise. And then all of a sudden he becomes the hero that we all need, that we've all been waiting for. Chris Tanev is traded for 3 top assets. Gudbranson gets a second and a third. Vanek gets traded for a third. Somehow he finds a way to deal Erickson and someone takes that. He takes on bad contracts and with them, either draft picks or young players, all of a sudden he's doing all these great rebuilding moves. I don't know. I think the rogue Jim may be the hero we need.
All right, as we finish up, we started with some Super Bowl talk. I get that this is a non-visual medium, but I have to paint a picture because, like, I know your love of the Philadelphia Eagles. And people that have been around you for a while, they know that. I think it's pretty clear. It's out there. You're not whole, but they're in the Super Bowl. Like, you should be over the moon. Even if you're feeling like crap, you should be pretty excited. Like, countdown to kickoff is now underway. You've changed your travel plans for the weekend. Like, I'm flying Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday. I'm hoping to get in just before kickoff to Miami. But, like, you're going Saturday because you can't run the risk of missing.
Night.
Yeah, okay. So
I'm doing a red eye. So I do arrive Sunday, but early in the morning.
Right, but to ensure that you are there, like, you're going to get pregame, like, you're going to, you know, you're going to soak it all in, and so you should. But the lead-up to Super Bowl has been incredible because twice this week, and I, quite frankly, was a little disappointed in you today when you showed up at the rink and you're just wearing your standard bot stuff, you have broken out your collection of Eagles starter apparel, and, like, not just one. You sort of had an Eagles winter coat the other day, and then yesterday roll in just like you're owning the town here because your Eagles are in Super Bowl, and you had, like, the legit Eagles starter jacket.
Yeah, from way back in the day, though, like the Rich Cotite, Kelly Green, Eagles across the back. If I were feeling better today, I was going to wear, like, an Eagles sweater that I have got. I've got a couple Eagles sweaters that I may pull off for tomorrow night's game. So I'm not done yet. I've got something in store for then. And if I see a Sunday for the Super Bowl, I've definitely got an outfit for that as well.
Okay, well, that answered. I figured you would, but I wasn't certain. Oh, yeah. But you've got your Super Bowl outfit picked out now.
It's laying on my bed. It's ready to go. There's a hat. There's a jacket. There's a jersey. There may be Zumba pants, I'm not sure, but there's an entire, there's an ensemble that's ready to roll.
Please make the Zumba pants happen. I can't wait. We'll have full disclosure for you on next week's podcast. We head out on the road. Hopefully the luggage makes it. Hopefully there's no travel trouble. We're going to warm climates, looking like it's mid-20s down in Florida and Tampa and into Carolina and Dallas to wrap up the road trip ahead here. Chicago and Tampa, though, before the homestand is done. The podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everybody is a part of their hockey family. Leave us with a Super Bowl prediction, Botch.
Oh, you know, I'm going with the Eagles. I think it's a great matchup for them. I think there's not many areas they're worse. Obviously, quarterback is a pretty important one. But I'm riding with my man, Foles. It took me a long time to come around on him. I'm going Eagles, and I'm saying, like, I'm going to go 34-31.
34 points. Wow. All right. We're going to track it. We'll see what happens. We'll catch up with you from the road next week. That is the PatCast. For Botch, Jeff Patterson, thanks so much for listening. Again, we appreciate your support. If you can share on social media, we would appreciate that as well. That's going to do it from Rogers Arena, the PatCast here on Province Radio.